so nice, so that's what I like. On today's episode of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop, his hip hop history uncut. Today's guest, Spider D and Geechee Dan. Enjoy the show.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And this is another historic interview. Our whole season lineup of historic interviews with icons and hip hop legends. We're honored to have one on our show today whose story is not relatively well known except to those of us in hip hop, but it deserves to be known worldwide. And that's what we're going to do today. Mr. Sidney Dwayne Hughes, better known to us in hip hop and the hip hop world as Spider D. How you doing, my brother?
Yo, Disco Daddy, pleasure, honor. I'm very honored to be talking to you.
Okay. Well, listen, this is how we're going to do this. You have a story that is very unique in hip hop, and although many people don't know this, you go back to the very beginning. And I'd like you to just relax and take the first 5 or 10 minutes of the show and just tell us about your upbringing, where you were born and raised, and what made you decide, what influenced you decide to make a move into hip-hop? Spider D, y'all.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that intro. For the listening fans that are probably too young to know who I am, Spider D. Spider is a basketball nickname from when I was playing ball in the mid-70s in New York City. And, you know, one day I was in my room puffing on Louis.
Were you born and raised in New York?
I was born actually in Peoria, Illinois, but raised in New York from about the time I was 4 years old in Hollis, Queens.
Oh, you're a New Yorker. Okay.
Yeah, went to school. Just so happens that I went to school with Davey DMX, who was Curtis Blow's DJ, and Russell Simmons. Davey, and I were in junior high school 109 in Queens Village. And, you know, we were like 13, 14, 15 years old. I think Russ was like maybe 2 years older than me and Davey.
Wow.
And, you know, Davey was always into music. He actually had a band before he started DJing. And at the time, I was playing trumpet. And so I,
what
you know,
year,
I tried
what year
out.
What year are you talking? What year?
We looking what year? At... That's got to be 73, 74.
Okay.
Before the hip-hop explosion.
Right. That's why I say you go all the way back. Go ahead, my brother.
You know, Davey is, to be honest, and I mean, he's my homeboy, but I'm not just saying that for that. Davey's probably the most talented individual in hip-hop because Davey has always been a musician. Then he became a DJ, so he's able to combine those elements of being a musician and a DJ. So when he did one for the treble, that kind of put him on the map for himself. But then he started DJing for Curtis Blow on shows, and the one thing that made Curtis as great as he is because Davey was always precise and on time. Any cue that Curtis Blow gave, he already knew with confidence Davey was on it. And so, you know, the funny thing is when I got into the business and, you know, I sought out Vaughn Mason because they had a bounce rock skate roll.
Oh, I remember.
So one day I'm sitting in the room, just, you know, I'm frustrated. I just got back from college in Michigan, and, you know, I'm kind of frustrated where my life is right now. So I'm listening to WBLS FM 107.5 in New York. And Frankie Crocker, who is always been known for breaking new acts and new records, he threw on this record. Frankie Crocker? Yeah.
Frankie Crocker is the one who made me want to become a DJ. I grew up in New York.
He's
Big RL, Spider D, the Big RL. I don't know if you remember the Big RL.
That's right. That's right, man. Yeah, even back when he was on AM, you know.
Right.
So Frankie had threw on what ended up, because when he had it, here's the thing, people didn't know. The record he played hadn't even been signed yet. They didn't even have a deal yet. And the record, he played a plate. He played an acetate plate.
Acetate.
And and it was Bounce Rock Skate Roll by Vaughn Mason and crew, but they didn't even have a deal yet. So when I went looking for the record, I couldn't find it because it didn't exist yet. Frankie was playing it off of a plate because his ear has always been, when he hears good music, he's going to play it whether this act is known or not. And so that was my inspiration. And I don't know why, but something just said to me, you know what, I'm going to meet these people and I'm going to see if they can help me propel my career. And, you know,
what year now? What year now are you talking about that you made this decision? What year are we at now?
This is summer 79.
Gotcha. Okay.
I had just came back home from college in Michigan, and you know, I didn't do so great in school, and you know, I was in flux. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Right.
But when I heard that song, and when Frankie Crocker said who it was at the end of it, to me, I knew it had New York roots because he said Vaughn Mason and crew. And so when he said crew, I said, okay, they're local. They're here somewhere. So I set out to find who they were. And unbeknownst to me, that record wasn't signed yet, so I couldn't find it.
Right.
And so as it turns out, they ended up signing with Brunswick Records, and I went up to Brunswick with a demo tape off of Bounce Rock Skate Roll, and they were like, yeah, you know, it's our music, da da da. It was like basically played me off.
Right.
So I was a little discouraged at that. But, you know, I'm a determined individual. So I said, you know what? I'm going to find out how to meet the artists themselves later for the record company.
Right.
Because the record company was like, whatever. So I ended up finagling for Vaughn because I had a friend in Hollis that had a cable TV show.
Okay.
So I ended up hooking up a situation where Vaughn was going to do the cable show, so I knew exactly where they'd be at what time on a certain day so that I could go and meet them. So that's how it all happened, how I met Vaughn.
Wow.
And, you know, he was, you know, at the time they were hot as hell, and he, you know, he kind of looked at me like, you're okay, kid, we'll see what we could do with you. But it didn't happen right away. It took maybe probably a couple of years. I think it was like 1982. So from I can remember the date exactly because it was Martin Luther King's birthday, January 15th, 1980.
Right.
When I met Vaughn Mason.
Okay.
So we didn't get into the studio together to do what became my first big hit, Smurfy's Dance, until late summer 1982.
Wow.
And so,
were you working with him in the meantime, off and on different things?
Yeah, he was giving me some tutelage on how to produce because I just dove into the business. I didn't know anything about producing or anything, but, you know, I'm a fast learner.
Right.
So Vaughn did take me under his wing, and when he heard my first couple of productions, he started telling me, you know, how to make it better and how to arrange it. He was very instrumental in making me better as a producer.
Right.
So eventually, in 1982, I went out to his home. At the time, he was living in East Orange, New Jersey. And
okay.
I went out to his place, and he had just bought a 808 drum machine. And I had never seen it before, but I was intrigued by it. And, you know, he had it in his basement. He said, yeah, go down there, you know, mess around with it, whatever, whatever.
Okay.
And so that was my first introduction at how to program a drum machine. And I ended up coming up with the beat for Smurfy's Dance off the 808.
Wow.
And
one of the first hip hop artists of that generation to use that machine. You, Africa Islam, Egyptian Lover was taught by Africa Islam, but all around that same period of time that you're talking about, that's very interesting. When you're in different parts of the country, though.
Absolutely. I love Africa Islam. That's my man. He treated me very well when I moved out to L.A. So, yeah, 82.
Okay.
I did the beat. And so then, you know, we said, okay, Vaughn was like, well, you should rap about the Smurf. And I was against that.
That was a cartoon series at the time. There's a whole generation that don't know about the Smurf.
Well, at the time, what created it, it spawned a dance.
Right.
The Smurf dance. And
okay.
I didn't want to do it because, you know, dances come and go so quickly, especially in New York. I'm like, yo, dude, I don't want to rap about something that's going to be here and gone.
That's going to be for a while,
before
we
even get a deal.
Right.
So, but, you know, here I am. I'm arguing with a man that's a platinum artist.
Record producer.
You know, and so I'm like, well, who am I to argue with him?
Right.
So he convinced me to write the lyrics for Smurfy's Dance. And I already had the bass line from the demo that I had brought to him. So, you know, he was spending the money to go in and record the song. And then he had one of his bandmates from his group, Butch Dayo, who's a very talented. He was their drummer.
Wow.
So we went into a studio called Ears in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded, you know, after much argument. The night before we went into the studio, we were having shouting matches. I mean, literally shouting at each other because I was arguing that I didn't want to rap about a dance that is going to be here and gone.
Right. Makes your record old.
And then, you know, I had to relent. It was like, okay, you know what? I came to this man. He's a platinum artist. Who am I to be, you know, telling him?
Yeah.
I need to let him tell me.
Okay.
So we went in and we recorded the first day. We just laid the tracks down and we did the I did my vocals, and then Vaughn wanted to add head, shoulders, knees and toes, Smurf that body across the floor, and I was like, hell no. I'm not doing that. So that was another argument. That was in the studio. But again, I had to think, wait a minute, yo, this dude knows more than me. So we ended up laying that, and that ended up becoming the hook. And
right.
I was against it, but we did it.
Yeah.
So we made Smurfy's Dance, and it was by far a hit. It was a hit because when I took it to some record pool people, Sure Record Pool in New York by Al Pizarro and Bobby Davis at the time, God rest Bobby Davis.
Okay.
And I had been to them before with some of my other demos, and they were telling me, nah, that's not ready. when I played them Smurfies dance, it's like, now you got a record. Bam. Now you got a record.
Okay.
So that was towards the end of 82. I signed with a small record label who I've never heard of, Telstar Cassettes. And, you know, I took the deal because I was like, yeah, whatever, whatever, you know. So it was towards the end of the year, so they didn't want to put it out, like, in the stores or anything. But what they did do was service all the record pools, and everybody loved the record. Grandmaster Flash and Junebug was spinning it at 371. New York fell in love with the record. And some of the main DJs fell in love with the record. And
let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask something at this point. At this point, you're young. You got a hit record out. Now, did you sign a deal after the record was on the radio and you saw that it was going to be big, or just before the record blew up, even though you knew you had a hit? At one point, because, you know, otherwise, I'm just saying, it would seem that the big label sitting back, seeing that your record is on the air and major market, would it come at you and you wouldn't have to sign with the small label? How did you end up signing with the smaller label? Was that by choice?
Nah, unfortunately, and I found this out later, other record companies that, because I let all that into the hands of Vaughn Mason, and other companies, like even the label that he was with Brunswick. Brunswick was getting ready to close their doors, so they didn't want to do that. We went to several record companies, and from what the record companies told me later was that Vaughn was asking for too much money. He was asking for like $7,500 up front, and, you know, end of, like, Profile Records, who I ended up signing with later, they were only used to paying like $2,000, maybe $3,000.
Yeah.
So,
Because rap was new at the time. Rap was new at the time. There were no Snoop Dogs and people commanding no multi-million dollar contracts anyway at that point.
Yeah, well, for example, here's the greatest example. Run DMC signed with the same label I signed with, Profile Records.
Profile.
They brought, it's like that, Sucker MCs. You ready?
Yeah.
$1,500.
Okay. One of the untold secrets of hip hop.
Profile made millions of dollars.
Millions,
of
my brother.
$1,500 investment.
Man. Okay. Well, that was the time. That was the day. Go ahead.
The only reason why that deal went down was because Russell Simmons, who became my manager, you obviously know Run, Joey Simmons is his brother. Joey just wanted to be out there. He didn't care what the upfront money was or whatever. Larry Smith, who produced it, you know, the money wasn't even an issue. Run was bugging his brother. Russ was like, yo, I just want to get out there.
They did
that deal.
Which makes
for like
a lot of sense. Which makes a lot of sense if you think about it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was a gamble. We're talking, I want my audience to understand, we're talking at a period when there were people saying hip-hop was a fad, that
they
rap wasn't going
to
be around too much. So it was assumed to be a gamble.
You know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Different,
you know.
Different day
and
era.
You was there from the beginning, too, so you know.
Right. I signed with a small label, the same thing. My record was called Gigolo Rap because it was a gigolo dance out. And I felt the same thing. As soon as the dance is over, then your record is old because it's about an old dance. But I was conflicted because it was a nationwide dance, one of the few dances where everybody was doing a gigolo in New York and L.A. You know what I mean? So I said, I'll go ahead and do that.
That's what happened with your record, I'm sure, because it spread across the country. And it looked like you were the inventor of that dance.
Of the dance,
exactly. So that's the same thing that happened with Smurfies. Same thing that happened with that. Because as it faded in New York, because in New York they started doing the Webo by the time Smurfies Dance came out. But everybody was so in love with the music of it, it didn't matter about.
Right.
It was about a Smurfing
right.
dance. So it spread
right.
across the country, and
it just became a dance record.
I worked off of that one record for a year. That's how that went down. So Vaughn Mason ended up being right. Technically,
right.
he ended up being right. And I ended up being smart to follow his lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of that. But then this is what happened. Here's the main thing in my career that what happened that changed my
okay.
whole life.
This is Spider D, y'all, talking about the early days of hip-hop on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. Go on, Spider D.
And let me give props to the people who I followed in the game. The
okay.
Curtis Blows, the Melly Mels, the Furious Five, that whole situation. Brother from Queens, I followed their lead because they were the leaders. They were the initiators. And I followed their lead. And so what I ended up doing with Smurfy's Dance is I couldn't record for anybody for a while.
Wow.
Because Vaughn Mason and the record company were fighting over who did I belong to, the production team of Vaughn Mason and Butch Dale or the record company that signed me. So they fought over
wow.
that for a while.
Wow.
But you know what? It worked out because this is what it forced me to do. It forced
mm-hmm.
me to produce other people, and it forced me to hone my production skills, which had gotten better after watching Vaughn Mason. So,
okay.
you know, I started producing for other companies. I did DJ Divine's Get Into the Mix, and
mm-hmm.
The next thing I know, I'm hot as a producer, even though I couldn't record as an artist.
Right. Man.
So
okay.
eventually, Vaughn Mason ended up giving me a release and saying, you know, you can go wherever you want to go. And, you know, I signed with Russell Simmons for management. And that was how I ended up at Profile Records right after
what year?
Run DMC.
What year was that?
84. 84 is
okay.
when I signed with Profile.
Okay.
So for 2 years, I couldn't do anything as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
From 82 to 84, I was stuck. And that's what made me learn to just be a producer and produce other people because I couldn't record as an artist.
Okay.
So during that time, Davey DMX, who was Curtis Blow's DJ, like I said, me, him, and Russell went to school together.
Right.
Davey brought me to Power Play Studios where he recorded one for the treble.
Mm.
And Power Play Studios became my home. I ended up convincing the owner of that studio that he should turn his studio into a rap studio because that was the wave. And
right.
he listened. And he went out and he bought all the latest equipment and
wow.
you know,
wow.
found engineers. And he ended up turning Power Play Studios into basically the rap haven of New York City at that time. And so, you know.
That was in Queens? That was in Queens or was it in Manhattan?
Yeah, it was in Astoria, Queens, which was
okay.
like maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles away from Queensbridge Projects, where Marley Marl and, you know, that whole crew was at.
Okay.
And
so
it was like everybody started recording there. I brought in
mm-hmm.
DJ Doc. DJ Doc has EPMD, KRS-One, MC Light,
wow.
Biz Markie.
Wow.
DJ Doc was like the premier hip-hop engineer. And
wow.
so he brought in all that clientele. So he and I, Power Play became our home. And again, Davey D is the one that introduced me to that. And that was really what propelled my career from there behind Vaughn Mason and crew.
Okay.
So
okay.
A lot of the biggest hip-hop music was coming out of Power Play Studios from the mid-'80s, just before what I guess they're now calling is the golden era of hip-hop, which began, I guess, in the 90s.
Okay.
But
okay. What about LL Cool J?
LL came by Power Play at one point, but he never recorded there. Or actually, I think Rick Rubin did a demo on LL at Power Play. But here's something that's really deep that I gotta let the audience know.
That's what we want.
There was four masters on a group, the Live Squad. Let me tell you who the Live Squad was. Stretch, who ran with Tupac, who was there with Tupac in the lobby when Tupac got shot coming into the building at the recording studio where Biggie and Puffy was upstairs at. The first time when he got shot, Live Squad did a track with Biggie, Nas, and Pac at Power Play Studios. And I'm trying to tell the owner now, because when Power Play was fading out, he started selling off all of the 2-inch tapes that he had in there.
And that was never released?
No, that was never released. No, because guess what? Stretch got killed on the anniversary of Tupac getting shot.
Wow.
And everybody thought that was retaliation because Tupac thought Stretch set him up. Stretch was Live Squad, and they had four masters in Power Play, and on one of those master tapes was Biggie, Nas, and Pac.
Man.
Crazy. Crazy.
That is. Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're hearing this from Spider D, y'all. Sidney Duane Hughes on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. This is a man who's got immense knowledge because he was there from the very beginning of the birth of hip hop in New York City. His story is one of the most interesting in hip hop. We've got maybe 4 minutes, Spider D. I could talk to you all day, my brother, okay?
Yes, sir.
But we're going to do another show, but I do want to get you your story out and what you're doing now, where you're at now, and looking back on your career, basically, and from the period you're talking about to now, where hip-hop is a worldwide culture, what do you think of it? What you're doing now.
I have my own label. Well, I've resurrected the label that I started. Here's my claim to fame in hip-hop. I was the first rap artist to start his own label and release his own singles on his own label. That was 1980, and it was Newtroit Records, and I named the company Newtroit because I was from New York, and at the time I started the label, I was going to college near Detroit. So I named the company Newtroit. Newtroit Records. So now I've resurrected Newtroit Records, and I'm putting out new material on myself, but here's the really kicker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing R&B. I'm about to release a R&B ballad called Ghetto Love, where I am singing lead vocals, backgrounds, wrote all the music, performed all the music. So I'm showing my versatility. It was a natural progression for me because I learned so much from being around so many great producers during my career, including the great Larry Smith, God rest his soul, who taught me so much. So that's where I'm at now, and I'm looking for, new talent, young talent, wherever in the globe they are, because Newtroit Records, I have a distribution deal that's worldwide. So I'm looking for new talent. I'm looking for great people because somebody helped me when I was coming up, so I'm looking to help others now.
How do they go about getting in touch with you, Mr. Sidney Duane, who is Spider D?
They could hit me up on spyderd@spyderd.com. Spider D at spiderd.com. And mm-hmm. I will help them like I was helped by Vaughn Mason back in the days, because you got to give back. Like somebody gave back to me, I want to give back and help somebody else.
Yes, sir. Okay, now, my last question. What do you think of the state of hip-hop culture? Well, it wasn't a culture when we began. It was just simply young brothers and sisters like us all trying to make a buck, actually. That's what drove everything, and this new thing
came along.
We were able to, you know, to get on it.
But what do you think now,
looking, being able to live long enough to look back on something that has grown from that into a worldwide culture? What are your views?
I try not to criticize anyone. You know, I know a lot of people say, this ain't hip hop, this ain't, but you know what? It's hip hop if the public says it's hip hop. Who am I to say, oh, you ain't hip hop? Who am I to say that? This is a new time now. If the public is saying, and they're showing it by buying it, this is what they like, who am I to, you know, to criticize that? I just want everybody to understand that, you know, coming out of slavery and all the stuff that we went through several hundred years,
this is
one thing that is ours. It's ours.
Yes, you know,
so what we need to do is stay behind the new people, whether we like or agree with what they're making now, because it's still what they still now call hip-hop. If it's transverse to this, then that's what it is. Who am I to say, this ain't hip-hop? This ain't hip-hop. Guess what? It's selling billions of dollars, and we should be proud, you yourself included, as the pioneers of this. So it's changed forms, but it's still hip-hop. It's what today's young people call hip-hop. So we need to embrace it and teach these young folks how to keep it progressing so that it never dies, ever.
There you go. Never you go. On that note, Spider D, Mr. Sidney Dwayne Hughes, we're going to thank you for your contribution to hip-hop and hope that your story gets out there. You've written a book, haven't you? You've written a couple of books. So let's just give me 30 seconds on the books.
Okay, yes. Very talented writer, Mark Skills, did my biography, So You Want to Be a Rapper, The Trials and Tribulations of Spider D. And then I have written a book called I Hate Being Black, based off of a song that I had recorded, which is just kind of basically chronicling the plight of black people, you know, from back when I was born all the way to today. And, you know, we're getting very good response from it, and I appreciate you bringing that up. And my brother, I really, really appreciate this opportunity to tell my story.
Well, hey, I'm glad that I was able to do that, because we had a little problem with my last show, my last producer. This one is much better. It's easier for the artist. And I want to thank you for your time and, again, for your contribution to hip-hop. And I want to wish you the best. And if you didn't miss, if you missed some of the information he gave out, he's on Facebook, y'all, Sidney Dwayne Hughes, Spider D, and you can get at him and get information on getting his books and see what he's up to next. Thank you, Spider
Thank
D.
Thank you.
Blessing
Thank
you,
Disco
my brother.
Daddy. Appreciate it.
All right. This is Disco. Thank you. This is Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop.
Hello. I'm Robin Lynn Maven, the CEO, creator, and producer of Vibes Live. We have over 2 million geographical listeners reaching 200 countries with nonstop music 24/7. Just tune in on VibesLive.com.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And as you know, we've been having historic interviews in our show, because that's what we do. all of the people featured on our shows are people who have some impact, some influence, or have been influenced by this worldwide culture that we know as hip-hop. Today we have a very unique guest. He goes by the name of Geechee Dan.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there is a history that many of you don't know about of mixtapes which were made in New York, which were popular just before records and after. And the man, among his many different talents, he's a collector, if I'm right. He's going to tell you about himself, his early beginnings in life and where he began and how he got into doing what he's doing. He also hosts a very popular radio show, which he's going to talk about. Mr. Geechee Dan, my brother, how you there?
What's up? What goes on, man? I'm good.
All right. How you doing today, my brother?
I'm all right. Trying to stay stress-free today, you know? So just hanging
okay.
out, you know, give me some, you know, give me something to eat, hanging out with my son, little Daniel. Big shout out to my son, little Daniel.
Well, we appreciate your time. We want you to tell us about yourself, how you started, where you were born and raised, and what got you into the level of hip-hop as a collector and doing your radio program. But start at the beginning, my brother. It's a Geechee Dan.
That's right. Thank you. You know, first off, I want to say thank you. You know, I appreciate the love, and you know, it's just been a blessing that I'm doing what I'm doing. I started doing this, my radio show, Hip Hop Geechee Dan Hip Hop Tape Show, about 3 years ago. I got the idea from Red Alert. He was one of the brothers that and you know, just basically told me to, you know, go for it. You know, I told him about
legendary
all the tapes.
DJ Red Alert.
The legendary, okay. That's right, Zulu Nation. Biggest shout out to Red Alert. That's my Zulu Nation,
yes,
brother. And Franksky, he's a radio personnel in Atlanta, Georgia, on V103. His name is Franksky, mm-hmm. And he kind of like, yo, Geechee, you know, you got all these tapes. Why don't you do something with them? I had a tape of him at an amateur contest at Harlem World back in 1981. His uncle owned Harlem World. And Franksky came up from Miami, Florida, to be in the contest. He was visiting, you know, hanging out for the summer in New York. And he you know, he could spit a little. He could rhyme a little. So he got into the amateur contest that included, at that time, Dougie Fresh was, his name was back then was Dougie D. And some other amateurs, and Franksky came in second place, but he never had the tape. He never had anything to show his children so they can hear this and see this. So 25, 30 years later, I bump into him in Atlanta, and he's like, yeah, man. He said, so we just started talking, you know, about hip-hop and stuff. He said, yeah. I said, you the same Franksky that was in an amateur contest in Harlem. He said, yeah, how you know? I said, I got the tape. He said, dude, I've been looking for that tape for 25 plus years.
So
I went up to V103 and I gave him, you know, the tape. I went back to his club. He had a club on Peachtree Street in downtown Atlanta. And I said, yo, here's the tape. And I guess, you know what I'm saying? I put a little bowl around it, you know, man. I'm like, yo, he was like, oh, snap, that's a pro DT. So, yeah, he said, yo, man, you got all these tapes. Biz Markie didn't have them. You know, Red Alert didn't have it. Nobody had the tape but me. So I said, yeah, there's no problem, man.
Let me stop you right there. How did that start? Go back to your beginnings and then tell
okay,
us how
go,
you
Okay, you want me to go back to my beginning?
Okay.
Okay. All right, beginning goes...
I want to know how with the first tapes and then what made you start becoming a collector, basically, what motivated you?
Okay, back in 1984, I grew up in Queens. I grew up in Hollis,
mm-hmm.
Off of Farmers Boulevard. And I used to rhyme. I started rhyming around
84.
Mm-hmm. And I used to listen to...
Hollis was getting hot as far as hip-hop center around that time with the emergence
yes.
of
Run DMC
and then the recording period.
Russell
Go
Simmons.
Ahead,
yes, okay. yes, yes. Indeed. So what happened was I was rhyming. I just started rhyming, but I was collecting tapes. And Zulu Beats, WHBI was playing tapes. Mr. Magic was playing a little. He wasn't really in. He was playing tapes. Supreme, the world's famous Supreme Team on, you know, WHBI, 105.9, 106. They was playing, you know, pieces of tapes of, you know, live recordings of, like, Cold Crush 4, the Kumo D, Busy Beat Battle, and Treacherous 3, you know, Zulu Nation jams. So I was like, yo, this would be hot. So I started, you know, recording and what they was, I was, you know, I was recording the shows. So then I would play the tapes. I had a radio, I had a boombox radio I bought in 1984. And I was, you know, that had the burglar alarm radio, the double cassette burglar alarm radio. So, yeah, I was, so I was walking around the neighborhood and I had a pocket full of tapes, my favorite tapes. And I would play, you know, Zulu tapes. I play Jazzy Five. I play Cold Crush. You know, whatever tape I was able to get my hands on, I would never, I never had the whole 90-minute jam or 120-minute or 60-minute Memorex tape.
Okay.
I had like maybe 10 minutes of it. I had bits and pieces. So for years, I was like, damn, I want the, I always wanted the whole jam, but they would never play the whole jam on the radio. They was always cutting it. Like after 5 minutes, they'd play like a snippet, and I'm like, dang! It was getting hot. Tape was hot. I'm like, I want to play. I want to get the whole tape. So as years went by, I just started telling people, say, I want that whole tape. I don't want just the Kumo D Busy Bee Battle. I want the what was before that, and I want to know what was after that. I want the whole tape. I want the whole party. So as time got along, I started networking, and you know, I knew cats in in Brooklyn. And, you know, for me, you know, traveling all over outside of Queens and me traveling to Long Island to my second hip-hop home, which is BAU, WBAU, Spectrum City, with Chuck D, Mr. Bill, Flavor, Hank Shockley, Keith Shockley, and Dr. Dre from UNTV Rap. I started, you know, getting down with them. That was my that was my Long Island family.
Wow.
So I so now my networking extended outside of Queens and Bronx and Brooklyn and started going like Long Island and Jersey. So as I ran,
were you, were you rapping or performing at that time, or were you just doing what
I was
you're
rhyming.
About now?
I was rhyming, but it, I wasn't on LL Cool J's level at that time.
I got you.
I just started, but I was collecting tapes. I just started like in the neighborhood. I was known as a tape cat. I was that cat that everybody said, "Yo, Geechee got that tape. Geechee got that tape. Geechee got this. Geechee got the Cold Crush." So I would be playing tapes in the park. I would play them in front of my house, like when I'm raking the leaves. When I'm, you know, when I'm raking the leaves or when I'm sweeping the driveway, I would have my boombox in the front of, on the step, and I'd be playing my tapes. So when people walk by, they like, yo, that's hot. Where'd you get that from? I said, I can't tell you. They like, yo, make me a copy. Make me a copy. So everybody in the neighborhood wanted me to make a copy of what I, you know, these tapes. So then as time went along, I just, my collection just grew. It just went from 10 tapes, 100, and then now I'm at like, man, maybe I got like 600, 700 jams.
Damn.
And now, and we're talking about, and yo, and check this out. We're talking about the whole jam now. I ain't talking about bits and pieces no more. I got the whole party.
What you always wanted with the whole jam.
Yeah, this is what I wanted, man. And then you know what's weird about this? Yo, B, let me tell you. What's weird is I get a tape, and I you act like somebody gave me a Rolex for Christmas.
Merry Christmas, my boy.
That's how I am. My eyes light up, man. I smile. You know, and people be like,
that's,
yo, you excited, man. It's just like, you know, it's
collector.
Yes.
That's the essence and heart of a true collector, whether you're a stamp collector, whether you're a coin collector, and in your case, hip hop, that they get the same charges. That's why people collect. You know what I'm saying? That's beautiful, though, because, first of all, you're serving a very, very unique historical purpose, whether you even knew it or not. I know you know now, but in the beginning, what you just love to do has now become something that academia, scholars, years from now, after me and you are dust, you know what I'm saying, have a very historical value to them. So, you know, with that in mind, I'm going to ask you, do you basically plan on donating your collection to a museum like Cornell's Hip Hop? What do you plan to do with or keep them as an estate for your family? Or, I mean, what do you know what I'm saying? You have some unique stuff, probably something that maybe you only have one copy of, you know what I'm saying, of a particular thing. So what do you plan to do with that?
Well, it's funny you mention that. I've been appointed head of the committee that oversees the tapes and the flyers for the Hip Hop Hall of Fame Museum with J.T. Thompson.
Wow. Okay, so, J.T. Thompson.
So right there, that tells you right there, maybe about 50 to 75 tapes I'm going to donate to the Hip Hop Hall of Fame Museum. And then the rest of my tapes and CDs, I'm going to put them in a vault.
Right on.
And leave it off to my two sons, little Daniel and my other son, my youngest son, his name is Jaden. So yeah, I'm gonna leave that with them.
Man, okay, my brother. Now, DJ Dan on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop.
Yes.
You have some radio shows of your own going on. Tell us about your radio show project, my brother, and how you became involved in that.
3 years ago, Frankski was just chatting it up. He was chopping it up. He's like, yo, you need to do something with these tapes. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. And then I said, yo, Red. I spoke to Red Alert when he was living in Atlanta. I was living not too far from him. And I was like, yo, man, I'm your Zulu brother. He's peace, I keep peace. He was like, yo, bro, yo. I said, yo, Red, I got tapes, man. Like, I don't know if I got as many tapes as you, but I got all these tapes, man. My goal is to have these tapes heard all over the world. Like Cold Crush 4 tape being played in Japan and Funky 4 tape being played in, in Africa. I want a radio station, a radio format on where these tapes are being heard 24/7 every day for 365 days a year on the radio, on a radio format, just playing tapes and commercials.
Yeah.
So then he said, yo, that's hot. That's a hot idea. You got my blessing, my brother. You got my blessing. Then my cousin is Uncle Boogie from WTSX Radio in Kokomo, Indiana. And he was staying at my house. And he's like, dude, you got boxes. You got like 3 boxes of tapes. What the hell? They just sitting there, collecting dust. He said, And he said, the funny thing is, what you got on every tape. You know it by heart. Like, you know where it is. You know who was performing.
Yeah.
You know what was said. You know, like I memorized it. I play a tape right now, and you think I never heard a tape before.
Yeah.
I play a tape right now, and they're like, yo, you act like you never heard this tape. I said, I know, but that's the way I am with my tapes. Hold on. I love my tapes, man. No joke.
Okay.
I love my tapes.
But this is the thing, though, my brother, before you continue about your show. Do you worry about the degradation? Have you put them on CDs? I mean, have you transcribed them? Because, after all of this. Okay. So,
yes. All my tapes is on CD. All my tapes is on CD and on MP3.
Okay. Okay. But you still keep the originals, whether they be great or not, because I got you. Got you. Okay.
Yeah. Some of the jams I do got. They wasn't on tape, but I do have
they
was on CD or MP3.
Okay.
I just got another. I just got the tape. I just got the jam another way.
Right. I got you. Okay, continue. You're telling us about the formation of you started to get your show together. You had all these tapes.
The 2015. I was approached by DJ Shawnee D. from Hilltop Radio. He said he was looking for a DJ to do some mixes for his radio show. I said, okay, cool. He said, what do you want to do, Geechee? You're looking out for me. You're doing me a favor. What can I do for you? I said, I just want to play my tapes on the radio. He said, all right, bet. Let's start it. Whenever you want to start it, let's start it. I said, bet. So he gave me a 2-hour slot, and I started playing my tapes. And I made up my made my own commercials. And I played the tape, and I said, hey, I got the Funky Four and, Blasey Blah at the T-Connect 1980. Let's go. I played the tape, and I played 16 minutes of it, and everybody's like, yo, that's hot. You playing tapes? And then word got around, and then next thing you know, Sha Rock wanted to come on the show because she's on the tape. And, you know, Raheem wanted to come on, and then Mr. Freeze from the Jazzy Five wanted to come on, and then Ski Valley wanted. So it just turned, I said, you know what, I'm a name the show, the Geechee Dan Hip Hop Tape Show. I came up with a synopsis that I interview all our hip hop icons and play the live tapes performances, park jams of them in honor of our hip hop icons, so I can bridge the gap for what was hip hop to what is currently what we at right now. So we can bridge the gap, the generation gap, because these kids don't know who Herc. They don't know Coke La Rock. They don't know Grandmaster Flash. You know, they barely know Rakim, and he's the next era after us. You know, so you know, I got to spoon feed these kids. You know, so they like who's Grandmaster Flash and who's WizKid and who's, you know, Jazzy Five. They don't know nothing about that. So I play the tapes. So, and then I bring them on my show. I say, you know what? Let me call the icons up and bring them on my show. So then the first season I did, I just had audio where they just called in. The second season, which was last year, I said, you know what? I could do this a lot. I could do a live streaming show instead of just, just being heard. I extended the vision where now they could be heard and seen all over the world. So I said, you know what? Let me just make a radio live streaming TV show out of this and call it the Geechee Dan Hip Hop Tape Show. And then that way I can invite all the icons on the show and then play the tapes. And they could be heard worldwide. So that's what I started doing last year. And then it just, and then everything else is just, it's just, you know, been added blessing, you know, to what I'm doing. You know, people coming at me, yo, I want you to do this. Huh? I didn't see this one coming. Oh, I want you to do this. You know, different icons will call me, you know, yo, Geechee, I want to come on your show. I'm like, I got a tape of you. You was with the Hypnotizing Five. They're like, yeah. I'm like, yo, this is an honor. So it just went haywire. Like, it just went crazy.
Right on, my brother. Let me ask you something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did the name Geechee Dan come from?
One of my favorite movies is Uptown Saturday Night. Harry Belafonte playing the character Geechee Dan. Back in the 80s, everybody had a nickname, you know, a little MC name or DJ name or, you know, T-Ski or Kev-Ski or, you know. So I said, I want to be different. My real name is Daniel. Why not Geechee Dan? That's my, you know, so nobody else had that name back then. Right. You know, nobody else is known as Geechee Dan.
Where did you get the Geechee from, though? Where did that pop up from?
Huh?
Where did Geechee pop up from?
Geechee Dan?
No, Geechee. Where did you get that name, that word?
Oh,
Geechee, how did you?
I just told you. I got it from the character from Uptown Saturday Night. The movie, Harry Belafonte played Geechee Dan.
Oh, I got
you. Yeah, the character.
Yeah,
you remember?
Right,
yeah, remember the movie Uptown Saturday Night? And it had Slicky Slim, and then had Geechee Dan. And
Geechee Dan. Now, you took me way back.
yeah. So I said,
through my memory bank, but I do remember that. It's just,
I was looking
so
for
it.
I had it all these years. That's what everybody know me since 83, 82. So I just said Geechee Dan. So everybody was like, you know Geechee? Who don't know him? He from Hollis. Everybody know him. So it just kind of stuck with me. Nobody had that name. You know how it is. Everybody's looking for a name, you know, DJ name, crew name. So I was like, well, Geechee Dan. And that's when I started, you know, I was collecting tapes first, and then I started rhyming. And we're talking about 83 and 84, and my first battle was LL Cool J.
Wow.
Yeah, he's the first dude I went at. I went at him. He didn't come at me. I went at him.
Right. Who won?
I went at him. Well, I came off that night. Let's say like that. He didn't smoke. He didn't run that. You know, let me tell you what happened. I got to tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened.
You want to hear this from Geechee Dan. Go ahead.
Let me tell you what happened, man. I was rhyming at a club on Farmers Boulevard in 112th Avenue called the Black and White. And I was in the back rhyming on stage, and I was rhyming off Catch the Beat. And I said, it's not a fable and it's not a myth. Cool J's real name is James Todd Smith. But when it comes to rapping, he can't compare because his hairline is back here. I swear. And everybody was laughing. Everybody, oh, shit. Oh, yo, he dissed that nigga. Oh, he dissed him. So, yeah. It was hot. Back then, it was like a Jay-Z, like, oh, snap. Because, first of all, I never wrote the rhyme. I just did it off my head. I always rhymed off my head at that time. So I never wrote nothing down.
You don't rhyme like that, though, my brother. Yeah, you spit.
Yeah, he heard about that. Yo, he came in about 5 minutes later. I walked off the stage and I walked up towards the front of the club and he was coming in. I guess somebody told him, "Yo, Geechee dissed you. I know you ain't gonna let him come off on you like that. He skinny, big ear dude like that. He ain't gonna let him come off like that." So me and him had a shoving match. I tried to knock his Kango off his head. It didn't come off. I wasn't. I'm like, because, you know, I wanted to expose him, you know. I just said a rhyme about his hairline, so now I wanted to knock his head off. I wanted to knock his hat off, and so everybody, yo, hey, everybody, look. I just rhymed about his hairline. Now, look, I exposed him. It didn't work.
That's crazy, man.
The hat didn't come off, man. That hat, he must have had crazy glue on that hat.
Oh, dude, that's one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. He hadn't made any records at that time.
I didn't make no records at the time. He just made I Need a Beat.
Okay.
He just made I Need a Beat that. This was in the winter of 84. He just made I Need a Beat. And, you know, he was popping. And, I was the second best in the neighborhood. He was the best in the neighborhood. I was on one side of Farmers Boulevard, and he was on the other side of Farmers Boulevard. So I was like, yo, I'm going to get at him. Like, you know, because that's what MCs do. And it wasn't like it was nothing personal. That's what MCs do. If you feel like you're hot, you nice, you go at the nigga that's nicer than you. You go at the dude that's nice, too. You know, I'm going to go at him. There was nobody else in the neighborhood but him that was nice. So I said, you know what, I'm going after him. So then the next week after that, he said, yo, Geechee, come here, man, come here. He called me across the street. He had like 8-9 dudes with him. They drinking old English. They drinking 40s. And, you know, so I'm like, yo, what's up, man? I'm by myself. And he's like, yo, come here, man. Come here. I'm like, nah, man, nah. You're going to jump me. Nah, you ain't jumping me. He said, nah. So we battled again. He got on me about my ears. And he talked about that and this and the third. He got at me. So I said, yeah, right, you got it, Todd. So we shook hands. We drunk some 40s, and we was friends ever since. Yes. To this day, he laughs about this shit. He just shakes his head and laughs. He said, yo, man, we friends. We're real good friends to this day.
Wow, that is amazing. Okay, Geechee Dan, you got a few minutes to tell us about your future projects, what you got coming up, and what your hope is for the future of hip-hop. Geechee Dan.
My future projects... Right now, as I stated earlier, I'm overseeing the committee that's for the tapes, the flyers, the jams from back in the days into the, you know, the Hip Hop Hall of Fame Museum. I'm also included with the Hip Hop Hall of Fame as an associate producer, and also I'm working on getting my show on, you know, different internet and FM radio stations, so I can, you know, build my brand and my show worldwide.
Wow. Okay.
And my thing is this. I talked to several people in the business, I talked to Dr. Dre from UN TV Rap, and he said, yo, Geechee, you know, this is now 2017. This ain't 1989 back when MTV was popping, or 1990.
Right.
You know, the world's changed. You know, everything is digital now. We got the internet. You know, you don't have to settle for looking for a network such as MTV or VH1 or, you know, BET to come looking, you know what I'm saying, to come looking for you for, you know, to do what you do. You know, you can do your own, you can do your show and have 100% control of what you do. And have it, you know, this is what you want to do. You want to do it on this platform. You know, use what you have, what's out there. Use what you have out there to get what you're trying to do. You know, you want to have a 24-hour, you know, radio show playing tapes, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. then there's a platform you can do that. You can create your own platform. You don't have to go begging for MTV or BET to hook you up. Because at the end of the day, if they do come in at you, they're going to want half your show or all your show. They're going to want 100% of your show. They're not going to, yeah, they may give you a little salary and all that, but you ain't going to have much control.
No creative control, right?
Okay. Right.
Now, have you written a book? Do you have a book planned?
I have a book. I have written a book back in 2008 called The Kingdom Hall No More. And that book is about my 16 years and experiences growing up as a Jehovah's Witness in Queens, in Hollis. And I'm looking right now, coincidentally, you bring that up. I was on the phone yesterday with a brother of mine that grew up with me in Hollis that read my book, and he wants to turn my book into a TV movie. So that's right now, that's what's being discussed about my book.
Blessing.
The book, blessing. You know, the TV movie is based upon the book, and the book is, you know, I talk about, you know, my experiences in the Kingdom Hall. I talk about my hip-hop experiences. So it has a structure. It has a beautiful flow. It's just how I detailed everything in chronological order of situations and occurrences that happened to me in the 70s and 80s. And early 90s when I, yes. So, yeah, so it's a good book. It's a good read.
You got a title for it?
The title's called The Kingdom Hall No More.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by me, by Daniel Chamberlain, by my government name.
Okay.
And it's on Author House Publishing.
Is it available now for purchase, or is it published?
It's on Author House.
Where can the public find it? Where can the public
Amazon.
Find
it? You can go to Barnes and Nobles, and you can go to Amazon, order it off Amazon, and you can order it off the website, Author House, www.authorhouse.com, and type in The Kingdom Hall No More. You'll see a picture of me walking away from a Kingdom Hall. You can't miss it.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. We got to wrap it up. And Matt, we want you to go out and get this man's book, Geechee Dan. As you can see, whether he knows it or not, he's also a hip-hop historian, as well as a collector, a very interesting personality, radio and television going on, the Geechee Dan Show. So, Mr. Geechee Dan, we want to thank you for your time. We want to thank you for your contribution to this culture that we call hip-hop. I look
Thank
forward
you.
To meeting you in the future, and blessings and success on the rest of your creative ideas, my brother.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And if I can say some shout-outs real quick, if it's possible.
Yes.
Okay. Big shout-out to my DJ of the show. His name is the original DJ Kid Flash. He's from Queens.
Okay.
He was one of the fastest DJs in Queens back in the early, late 70s, early 80s. So he's
Still
down
active.
With me. Yes, he's active now. I brought him out of retirement.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because of my show. Yeah, his name is Kid Flash, and so big shout out to Kid Flash. Big shout out to my team, Daryl Pringle, Visioneer Management, and Boss Lady Joella. She's out in Gary, Indiana, and I want a big shout out to Team Hollywood, my woman Sheila. And all the hip hop icons, you know, that's been put in the work to start the culture we love and cherish so much that we call hip hop. And a big shout out to my sons, Jaden and little Daniel. Love y'all.
Word. Geechee Dan on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Thank you, y'all. Don't go away. We've got more exciting guests coming up each Saturday, 1 p.m. worldwide. Peace.
Yes.
So, wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye. Oh,
Ralph,
Charles, Paul, Larry,
Robin Lynn, and I'm a Taurus, and I love listening to Vibes Live Radio. Thank you for keeping the vibes live.